Thank you, Joyce, for bringing that reading to us. Got all kinds of metaphors going on. Last week, I started to talk to you about living within the gospel word. We spoke about the spiritual house of God, that we become a part of that when we accept Jesus into our lives. We don't just live in the house, we are the house. We don't step inside the walls, we are the bricks that make the walls up. Jesus is the cornerstone. And Paul talks in all kinds of different metaphors, doesn't he, about the language of the body, the eye and the foot, and the relationship between different aspects of the body relating to all of us. He's just been talking there about ligaments, about the way we're all held together. There's all kinds of metaphors in the New Testament relating to the shape of community, and really what we need to do is to look at some practical ways in which we can be a word-centered gospel community, something that is going on in everyday life. This community thing is not something that is done to us by somebody else. One of the Achilles' heels of the church for many decades has been that for some strange reason, those in leadership do something to and for those who follow. And it can turn into a spoon-feeding exercise. The New Testament church is a church where the leadership, people like Paul himself and Jesus, of course, is the ultimate model, are actually there to equip and enable and send out the church in order that it would do the same for itself as each one does for each one. And so Jesus simply sets a model, and then he says, now you go do it. He doesn't say, I'm going to lead your church. Paul teaches and encourages, but leaves people behind. And other people, younger people such as Timothy, are there to begin the process, and so it fans out. Wesley himself was a master at this, as he set up his little societies all around the country. He said, I'm not staying with you. You want me to come and lead you? No way. You lead yourselves. You get on with it. But I will set you up, and I will show you, and I'll give you an example. And then I'm off on my horse to do another 25,000 miles this year. And that's how it works. It's about facilitation. And if we're to be a community of the gospel word, we need to learn what it means in the ordinariness of daily life. Two or three years ago, I went for longer than that now. Time goes by. Perhaps four or five years ago, I went for quite a long walk along part of Offa's Dyke in the Welsh borderlands. And I'm a bit of a geek when it comes to old forts and castles and medieval history. And there's loads of them down there, absolutely lots. And it was amazing to be able to go and have a really, really good look at them. But whenever I see an old fortress that dates back X number of hundreds of years, one of the things that always staggers me is the fact that the stones that we stand and look at have stood there still for so, so long. They have been there sometimes for perhaps even 1,000 years. And I often wonder what it looked like when it was first built. You know, we have this picture of dark, weather-worn, weather-beaten stones. But they must have been so amazing when they were first carved by skilled craftsmen, as each block took its place in the wall. But one thing is very evident, especially in Wales, the weather. The weather has beaten those stones smooth, all the rough edges knocked off them. And the weather has played its part, but you know they are still there. And you and I, as we read from 1 Peter last week, you and I are being built into a spiritual house. Jesus is the cornerstone. Without him, the wall falls down. And we are being built into it. But as we're built into that spiritual house, we are going to get beaten and beaten and beaten and beaten by the storms of life, because that's just what it is in the world. And as a community, that makes it all the more important that we are a strong spiritual house, because we don't base our community on the fact that everything is perfect and right and happy and there are no problems. I don't know what planet we live on if we think we're going to be a church like that. We are a church that is in the world, and the world is full of strife. And we will have the weather and the storms of life thrown at us as a community. And it's really, really quite a normal thing. And all the more necessary for us to pastor one another, to disciple one another in everyday life. We tend to think of pastoring and disciple, pastoral care and discipleship and even community itself. We tend to think of very organized things. We tend to think of community as being something under a banner, a letterhead, maybe Trinity Methodist Church, or whatever church you come from, if you're a visitor. Our pastoral care can tend to be formalized. We employ lay pastoral workers, which is a right and a proper thing to do. But that doesn't mean that the rest of us are not required to engage in pastoral care because we've got two people paid who do it all for us. We talk about discipleship and we think, oh, well, that's only those who are qualified can disciple. And it's got to be in a formal setting at 7:30 on a Tuesday night, when we sit in a circle and we drink tea and do an Alpha course or do a Freedom in Christ course or do a membership course or do whatever we want to do. But the biblical model is much, much more everyday encouragement and discipleship between you, me, your neighbor, each of us, through the way in which we live. Just think about the teaching of ancient Israel from Deuteronomy 6. It says this in chapter 4, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all of your heart and with all your soul and with all your might. And these works that I command you today shall be on your heart. And you shall teach them diligently to your children and shall take and shall talk of them when you sit in your house and when you walk by the way and when you lie down and when you rise." That means that discipleship is done in the ordinariness of daily life. There's nothing organized about pastoral care, about discipleship, about the community of the church. A little bit like a family. There doesn't have to be a Monday morning meeting at 10:30 every week for a family to say, now this is how we're going to look after each other this week. It kind of just happens because that's what families do. And the community of the church is called in a similar way. Paul says in 1 Thessalonians 2, verse 8, "We loved you so much that we were delighted to share with you the only gospel of God, but our lives as well, because you had become so dear to us." It was important to share not only God's gospel, but our lives as well. And that's why I asked earlier if anybody wanted to share anything about the journey. It's great to have Charles and Deirdre to share that little aspect of their lives, something that we as a community can get hold of and pray for and pray into as a very ordinary daily thing. And so as we share our lives with each other, it's not about saying, hey, look at me, I'm a model for you to follow. Please don't ever use me as a model to follow. It won't do you any good at all. We're not to do that. But we are to model it nevertheless. We don't model our Christianity in a way of saying, if only you were like me, you would grow in your faith. But we are to model it anyway in order to show those around us what a wonderful life we have. A life which is based on this gospel community, this gospel word, this absolutely firm foundation. In the 1990s, the Leaning Tower of Pisa was finally reopened to the public. It had been closed for quite a few years, and during that time, the engineers completed a renovation project which cost $25 million. Quite a lot of fundraising, that. And it was designed to stabilize the tower. They removed 110 tons of dirt from underneath the tower. They reduced its famous lean by about 16 inches. And it was necessary because the tower had been leaning further and further and further for several hundred years, and it was indeed in danger of falling. There was a point at which the 185-foot tower was 17 feet further south at the top than at the bottom. 17 feet. And the Italian authorities were concerned that it would soon collapse. What was the problem? Was it a bad design? No. Was it poor workmanship? No. Was it an inferior grade of marble? No. The problem was underneath. It had been built on the shifting sands of a former estuary. The soil wasn't stable enough to support a monument of that size. The tower had no firm foundation. The church is not strong enough to support something so monumental as the gospel if we do not have the foundation of Jesus Christ. There are people in our churches who sometimes think Jesus is an optional extra. There is no church without Christ. There is no church without the empty cross. There is no church without the resurrection. There is no church without the power of the Spirit, whom Jesus sent to us. And it is only those truths. Call it dogmatic if you want, but there has to be ultimate truth in our faith. Otherwise, it can stand on nothing. We have to have a place where we can say, I know that my Redeemer lives. Yeah? I know that my Redeemer lives. I know that my Redeemer lives. And the firm foundation is what we build our community on, which is just so amazing, because when we build on firm ground, we know that nothing can shake it. So as even the storms of life batter the stones, the bricks, which is us, in the walls of this spiritual house, no matter what comes our way, no matter how much age weathers us or how much the elements will cause us to discolor or crack or be damaged, no matter what the circumstances of life are that are hurled at us to bring pain and distress and discomfort, that wall stands. It will never, ever break, no matter what happens to us in this world, because we stand on Christ. And Paul is so very clear about this. He's so clear, and I'm going to draw this to a close because I said I wouldn't speak for long, but you know that's never going to happen. Paul says, we will no longer be infants. We will no longer be infants tossed back and forth by the waves and blown here and there by every wind of teaching and by the cunning and the craftiness of people in their deceitful scheming. Instead, speaking the truth in love, we will grow to become in every respect the mature body of Him who is the head. That is Christ. From Him, the whole body, joined and held together by every supporting ligament, grows and builds itself up in love as each part does its work. Isn't that a wonderful message? Are you not encouraged by it? I just think it's amazing. And the growth of the church, the future of the church, is built on this truth. We're having a really nice couple of weeks and a few more weeks to go, and Anna is leading us, and I'm just so grateful to you, Anna. It's just so lovely, and you have my 100%, 1,000% support, and I just think it's so lovely. I know it's not everybody's cup of tea, but then again, traditional worship isn't everybody's cup of tea either. Nothing is, because we're all human beings. But one thing is for sure, whether we retain our traditional elements as a church, whether we become a more modern feel to our church, none of it will bring anybody in. We need to understand that. We need to provide for them when they do come, but none of it by itself ever changes the church. The only thing that changes the church is the way that we live. Our worship on a Sunday is just an expression. It's just an expression of our love for Jesus, our love for God. We don't do it to put on an act in order to look attractive to other people so that they might say, oh, that's a nice noise. Anna does sound lovely this morning. I think I'll go to church. People don't function like that, and we're very naive if we think that they do. But when we live as a community which is built on the foundation of Jesus Christ, the immovable foundation, people see something different in us. And they begin to see that even though we're weathered and we're going through pain and the struggles of life, there's something so solid in us that they want a piece of it. Then they'll come to worship and we need to provide for them. Liz and I have a friend. Liz's great friend, really. And she's got terminal cancer. But she's amazing, isn't she, Brenda? She's outlived the allotted time that was given her. But she's just so full of joy, not afraid of death, so loves Jesus, and just uses the whole experience as a witness to all the medics and all the professionals who she deals with to tell her story of how nothing can shake her. Because she stands on the firm foundation. No matter how weathered she is and how temporary she is, nothing can change her faith in Christ. And I think that's just so wonderful that Paul says, as we grow up in him, we will no longer be as infants, tossed about, but we will grow into maturity. And that's my prayer for myself. I hope I'll get a bit more mature one day in my faith. But for each one of us, that we would, each of us, grow deeper into Christ, that our church would become stronger and just more worthy of flying the banner of Christ over the door. We're going to have a short time of prayer, and then we're going to sing a couple of songs to close.